You're listening to New Mexico Filmworks on Talk 1260 KTRC with your host, Dirk Norris.
New Mexico Filmworks is a program of the New Mexico State Film Office brought to you by Hutton Broadcasting. Later in the show, I'll be speaking with the Austakerke Group. That's a crew that went out to Austin to participate in the 48-hour film project. But right now, I have Christopher Michael Roybal in the studio with me. Chris was born and raised in El Valle de Arroyo Seco in New Mexico. In 2002, he graduated from St. Michael's High School in Santa Fe and relocated to Los Angeles, where he attended University of Southern California. At USC, he studied under elite industry professionals while attending prestigious USC School of Cinematic Arts and Annenberg School for Communication. In 2006, he graduated with honors while earning degrees in communication and cinema television, and then promptly relocated back to New Mexico, where we're happy to have him here. Since founding Incredible Films, Chris has written and directed various projects in New Mexico while working to establish a truly self-sustained local film industry and provide film education and training for local youth. He actively works with Future Voices of New Mexico, a collaborative filmmaking project that takes inspiration from the All Roads Film Project of the National Geographic Society to collaborate with local teachers to engage students at all stages of filmmaking process, including pursuing careers in the industry. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So give us a little more background. What made you want to get into film in the first place?
Sure. Well, for me, I've always loved writing. First and foremost, that's my passion. I think that's probably what I'm best at in life. And so when I've ever looked at a new art form, I've always looked at it as from a writer's perspective. And so when I was going out to attend the University of Southern California, I was planning to study broadcast journalism and hopefully be on ESPN or SportsCenter or something like that and write about sports and broadcast and all that sort of stuff. So that was my plan. And then right before I went out to Los Angeles, I kind of was thinking, well, what's LA going to be like? I had never been there before and I didn't really, know what to expect. And of course, one of the things that pops up is Hollywood. And so I'm thinking, like, from a writer's perspective, what would it be like to write a film? And so I started taking classes for film, screenwriting classes, my sophomore year in college. And really, that's when I caught the bug. That's when it kind of just clicked. And I thought, this is exactly the type of writing that I want to do. Because not only is it something that just it entertained me, it was something new, it was interesting, but I thought it was also a way to reach a large group of people, much more than some of the other forms of writing I was doing, poetry or fiction. And so I started taking classes, and that slowly started to kind of progress to me wanting to direct, simply because I couldn't see myself giving up my scripts to somebody else.
It's like handing over a child.
Exactly. I was like, I see this so clearly in my mind. I've spent so much time writing that it's like, I just can't bear to part with it. And so I then started studying directing and taking on more of that role, and finished my education at USC, moved back to New Mexico, and basically just started making films. And in that time, I've kind of been forced to learn how to produce and do cinematography and edit for a lack of resources, and also just to give myself more breadth and depth and hopefully make myself in later years a better director, because I'll have empathy for the other roles on set.
So that wasn't part of the producing, the rest wasn't part of the instruction at USC?
It was. I got a great taste of everything at USC, but my main focus was, I would say, writing and directing. I tried to kind of dive into a little of everything, and I basically minored in cinema television, because at USC, being as kind of prestigious and competitive as it is, unless you have already sort of a big background, or as I like to say, a rich father who donated maybe something to the school, you're not necessarily going to get in as a major with no experience. And I didn't really have any experience film-wise. So being a minor, I was actually able to, instead of just picking one course of study, whether it was production, writing, or critical studies, I was able to take classes from all over the cinema school. So I took, business classes, to writing, to producing, to cinematography, to, set design, all different kind of stuff, and got a good little taste and tried to figure out what I liked the most, which I always thought it was going to be writing, and it happened to be that's what I ended up focusing on.
When you went out there, had you always intended to come back to New Mexico, and were you aware of the film industry in New Mexico?
I had always intended to come back to New Mexico. I think that was always in my mind. I love Northern New Mexico, where I was born and raised, and I just always had planned to kind of go away, see what that was like, and settle here and have a family and be close to my family and all that stuff, which was very important. And so I hadn't necessarily thought, like, I'll go away and come back and work in the film industry as, as that kind of, you know, progressed when I got to SC. But I did become more aware, I think, of the growing industry probably my junior and senior year, which was around 2005, 2006. And that was about the time in 2005, the fall of 2005, that I set out to make my first film on my own that was outside of school. And so I basically, at that time, I was at SC in LA, and I sent out kind of like a letter to a bunch of producers that were listed on the NM Film website saying, I want to make a film. I don't have any resources, but this is my idea. I want to do it really Dogma 95, all natural in the way that we do everything. And so I kind of like, if anybody can give me any help, please do. And a local producer, Luca Ciccarelli, here from Santa Fe, he actually contacted me. And so he helped me produce my first film in the fall of 2005 called Our First Goodbye. And from there, it was just kind of after doing that, it was like, yeah, once I graduate in 2006, I want to move back and make films in New Mexico. I like the process. I like the people here. Mm-hmm. And also, because the industry is so new, I like the idea of us being able to define how we want to run the industry here. You know, what kind of ethics, what kind of you know, approach we want to take to how we make films in New Mexico.
I think there are a lot of people in New Mexico, a lot of filmmakers in New Mexico that really have this desire to grow the industry from within the state. And it's great to have the Avengers and the Lone Ranger and all that come in, but to be able to have a self-sustaining industry here, I think is really important as well. So it's great to hear the way you're thinking with that.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I totally believe I'm a big advocate for a self-sustained industry here. I believe it's important that, as you were saying, we cultivate local talent, local you know, resources here in New Mexico, because if you look at, you know, historically how the film industry moves from city to city, you know, it is kind of like who has the best incentives in town or who's hot from now and again. And so it's important that, you know, we prepare as an industry for the times when it gets lean, for the times when necessarily Hollywood just isn't bringing in the productions and we're actually producing them ourselves. So it's really cool now to see a lot of other people, you know, just going out and making films and raising funds and just going out and producing stuff. You don't have to have all the skills in the world to go out and make a film. You just have to, you know, want to tell a story. And so I think it's an exciting time to be here. And I definitely, that's another reason why I want to be in New Mexico, because, you know, I feel invested in the success of the industry here. And I want it to be something that we just continue to grow and make flourish and put New Mexico on the map, really, because the stories that we have to tell are just as important as any stories in the world.
Right.
And the technology as it is nowadays to put the cameras in hands of people who haven't necessarily been able to tell their stories before is just simply amazing. And so it's a good time to make film in general, and it's a great time to make film in New Mexico.
I think we're still at the point there where we need somebody with a father that has a lot of money to put into it.
I think so. Yeah, it'd be nice. We just need like one big donor for New Mexico that comes in and just green lights everything that everybody wants to make. But
right. Yeah. Well, yeah. Dream on. But
yeah. Well, maybe they'll hear this and someone will feel good and want to donate now. I don't know.
Sure. So you recently participated with the 48-hour film project. You had a film called Sweethearts.
Yes.
That I thought was just really terrific. And the whole thing was done split screen. You had a young man and a young woman, and we kind of followed them in how they had other interests in their lives and kind of got together. What was kind of the genesis of this, and where did the idea come from?
Well, the idea came from directly the students I work with through my Future Voices of New Mexico filmmaking program. I teach a filmmaking class at Warehouse 508 in Albuquerque. Basically, we have three semesters, a fall, a spring, and the summer. And so our summer semester was kind of short, and we didn't really have a group project together that we wanted to work on. And someone suggested, hey, have you thought about doing the 48-hour film fest with your students maybe? And so I thought, well, it's a little condensed for me to try to teach in 48 hours everything I want to. But I thought, you know what, let's give it a try. I had never done it before, and I hadn't really planned to do it. But with the students, I thought, you know, let's dive in. Let's get them excited and see what happens. And so since I teach mostly middle schoolers in this particular class, I just thought, you know, I really want to utilize them. I want them to be the cast and the crew, obviously, if possible, and not really look for extra help outside of that, just so that they would get the majority of the experience and the benefit from doing the festival. And so looking at the students, I was thinking, you know, as sort of the overseer, the director of everything, you know, how can we utilize them to really tell a story that's kind of particular to them and not having them play adults, or just could be done by any age group. And so for me, a little teenage love story was super cute. I thought that would be awesome. And it was just something that would really, I thought, would be fun and lighthearted and would work well. And so that's where the idea of this girl and this boy kind of losing each other and trying to find each other came from. And it just sort of, you know, I kind of brought in my artistic sensibilities in the split screen. That's one of my trademarks, and some other stuff. And it just ended up being a really great experience that I think the kids loved and people liked, which was cool.
Just real quickly, was it technically difficult to do that? Because you have to coordinate the way they turn toward each other and pick up things and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it is technically. It's a little difficult. As I said, I've had some experience, so it made it a little bit easier. But it's a lot of reviewing the footage you shot. I mean, thank goodness I was shooting on a DSLR, so you can kind of review it as I was shooting it. And it's just a matter of kind of mirroring it. And just the way that I operate, I have a very visual mind, and so I was able to kind of write a shot list of 112 shots we needed and just make sure that everyone I got of her, I got of him. So
Right. Yeah. And did the kids enjoy it? Did they have fun?
Yeah, they had a lot of fun. They had a blast. I mean, they basically had a two-day slumber party at one of the students' homes, and they just, you know, ate all the snacks that we bought them and made all kinds of, you know, just they had fun telling stories and really bonded over it. And in the end, seeing their film at the chemo on the big screen, that's kind of like the kicker. That's really what solidifies what I teach them. And that was an awesome experience.
There's nothing to replace that experience, I think. Well, we're going to take a break here, Chris. And we've been speaking with Christopher Michael Roybal, and we'll be back with New Mexico Film Works on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio. Back, and you're listening to New Mexico Film Works on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio, and my guest is Christopher Michael Roybal. Welcome back, Chris.
Thank you.
And you were mentioning some of the work you do with kids. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Certainly. I work with, as you mentioned in my bio, I work with a program called Future Voices of New Mexico, and we take our inspiration from the All Roads Film Project, which is a division of National Geographic. Mm-hmm. And basically how I operate in Future Voices is that I'm kind of like a film mentor. So throughout the regular school year, we have middle schools and high schools throughout the state of New Mexico, primarily in Santa Fe and Albuquerque. Mm-hmm. That participate in our program. And so myself and a couple other filmmakers, and then we have a group of photographers, we go into the schools and we help teach filmmaking and photography and just kind of give a little bit more support to the classes that they already have. And in some cases, like my case, I also speak about what it's like working within the industry. I give career advice, all the sort of things that students, you know, they may be getting in their classes, but it's always nice to have it come from somebody who's already graduated and and is experiencing it firsthand. So it's very rewarding to be able to give back that way. When I really got into film and I wanted to come back to New Mexico, it was always a goal of mine to teach and give back in some way. I didn't necessarily know what age group it would be, but when I sort of found, or I guess Future Voices found me in 2009, it was just sort of a match made in heaven, because it allowed me the chance to go into schools and speak about something that I'm really passionate about and that I am experiencing firsthand. I consider myself still a student too.
Yeah.
So I feel that, you know, I get along with the students well, and it also allowed me a chance to just continue to improve my skills as a teacher. I feel that the same sort of skills that you put forward as a teacher help you as a director and help you, you know, just kind of produce work, I guess, in many ways. And so it's been really, really nice. This will be my third year working with Future Voices. Our school year is just about to start in the beginning, well, middle of September. So we're gearing up to go into schools and hopefully, you know, really help the students make some awesome films and just you know, have a good time.
How did that connection first happen?
I actually happened to be working with an AmeriCorps program called Public Allies New Mexico. And basically that AmeriCorps program, it trains youth, 20-year-olds within New Mexico, to work in nonprofit organizations by placing us in nonprofits. And so it just so happened that I got placed with the Film Union here in town. And so it was kind of another match made in heaven to many, in many respects, because I was able to bring my expertise and what I was learning running nonprofits into the film union, and I was able to work with many other nonprofits to create videos about the work that they're doing, just to publicize, you know, kind of their sort of what they're trying to get out, and, you know, what they're trying to look for and how they're trying to change the world for the better and that sort of thing. And so I just happened to be asked to come speak at the kickoff for Future Voices in 2009 as a representative of the union, because I was a younger student. Right. And so I went in and spoke. And then after that, Future Voices kind of approached me and said, oh, you know, we've been trying to, you know, we want to get in touch with you. You heard about who you were, and it'd be great if you would continue to speak, you know, about the film industry in the schools. And that's how that started. And so, and then I just became more and more involved with Future Voices, and now that's my main employment now.
And Future Voices was already established with the school, so it was just a matter of plugging you into the network. So
yes, yeah. In 2008, I believe, is when we kind of like were founded here in the state of New Mexico, and so it's been a growing process for us since then also. And so it's been nice to be kind of involved along with that and to grow the program. And so we basically started mostly here in Santa Fe and have slowly grown throughout the rest of the state. And so I'm the Albuquerque liaison mm-hmm. for the program. And so it's kind of my job to hopefully grow it more in Albuquerque, which I'm trying to do. And so I need to, as I mentioned that now, it reminds me of the things I need to do when I get home, send out emails and contact a lot of teachers and say, hey, I'm here. Come, right. Please use me. So
right. And so what kind of reaction do you get from the kids?
It's a mixed bag. There's certainly the students that you have that kind of are like, you know, in the schools, they're like, ah, I'm taking the class, but I don't love it. Mm-hmm. And so it's like they listen and they're respectful and everything, but it may not be their cup of tea. And then, like with the students that I teach at Warehouse 508, it seems like they're the ones who really want to take it, because they're coming, you know, outside of school and most right. times kind of like an after school program or mm-hmm. during the summer, and they're much more interested. And so it's easy for me to get them excited about filmmaking and just, you know, we just talk about films and we kind of, you know, watch a lot of, whether it's YouTube clips or stuff that they're used to seeing, and analyze it mm-hmm. in a way that hopefully is very accessible to them learning about filmmaking, because we're not trying to inundate the kids with too much information.
Mm-hmm.
And Future Voices in my class, it isn't an advanced course. It's about learning the basics and learning how to do them well,
mm-hmm.
because then you can carry those skills everywhere. And so it's really, really cool for the most part. The students just, you know, they want to make films. They want to make videos. They want to be heard. And so, again, another thing that's great about the technology present today is, as you know, cameras are getting smaller and easier, and cell phones and flip cameras and DSLRs. Like, the kids can go and do that now so much easier than ever before.
Right.
And so I think with that technology, and then with our curriculum, and, you know, just the ability to kind of teach and look at film in new ways than ever before, it's really an exciting time to be young and into visual medium, visual arts. So.
Ah, to be young.
Yeah, I know, right? And I'm old already, 28 is over the hill, I feel like it.
Is there a media literacy kind of component to what you do, which I'm a big proponent of that, and making people aware of what's happening to them when they're seeing visual images?
Yeah, very much so. Very much what I teach, I kind of look at it and I sort of try to give them an all-around education about not only what they're producing, but the effect they have in others and how it affects them. And so we'll look at, you know, take for example YouTube, and we see and we ask them, you know, what clips are you into? What do you watch a lot? You know, what do you want to produce? And then I ask them, well, why do you want to do this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what makes you want to do this? And I always ask my students, be very honest with yourself and what your intention is to create media. Because not only then will you most likely end up getting what you want, but it's just your messages will be clear, and I feel it's more ethical to do that. Even if it's just, you know, some of my students say, I want to get 1,000 hits so I can, you know, my channel can move up on YouTube or something like
right.
that. Or some students, it's very clear that they like one type of story, like they like to just do Greek myths over and over again. And so it's just part of the education process, I believe, is always important, is to not only teach them the skills, but to teach them, as I said, the ethics and kind of a responsibility to use those tools in a productive way. It's not just like, here, do this and make trash.
Right.
Like I hope as a filmmaker, as an artist, that we strive to benefit society, communities, peoples with our art. And so that's what I think is important to me as I teach.
It's nice to hear that you and other folks have that kind of an ethic about it. We just have a minute left. Tell us about your new project. It's called Beautiful Things.
Yes, my new project. This will be my 8th film, my 4th feature, and I'm really excited about it because it's something I've never done before quite like it. Basically, I'm almost improvising the entire film to a degree. I have a theme, which the film is about a young man searching for meaning in his life and the most beautiful thing in the world. And I haven't ever said really what that beautiful thing is, but it's love.
Yeah. Okay.
And so as this character is looking for it, he's going to kind of explore New Mexico, and it's going to be visually stunning and very poetic and just really, as I've told people before, is I feel like I've been practicing my craft up to this point, and now it's time for me to perform. And that's what I hope Beautiful Things will be.
Chris, it's been good luck with that.
Thank you.
And it's been a pleasure having you in the studio, speaking with you. And we'll get you back after you get Beautiful Things done and find out how that went.
Yeah, thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. You're listening to New Mexico Film Works on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio, and we'll be back in just a minute. This is New Mexico Film Works on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio. I'm your host, Dirk Norris, and you can hear this show streaming on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio by going to santafe.com and clicking on the live stream link. You can also hear this in previous shows on podcasts by going to santafe.com, clicking on the podcast link, and going to New Mexico Film Works. And right now we're doing a conference call, so hope this works out all right. There may be a little bit of a delay. But we're talking with the Austinkerke Group. This is a group of filmmakers from Albuquerque that went to Austin to participate in the 48-hour film project. And Nick Ward is on the line. Nick, how you doing?
Hey, Dirk. We're doing absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for having us on board.
Oh, my pleasure. Why don't you go ahead and name everybody else that's on the call here.
Right now, we've got, and so it's clear, we took a bunch of New Mexicans down, but we also teamed up with a whole bunch of folks down in Texas, in Austin. So this is a mixed group of Southwest filmmakers. Here on the line, we have with us the other producers. I produced and was our unit production manager, and then Brent Tiano and Cheryl Brown helped with producing. They're both out of Albuquerque. Our director, Fritz Eberle, was also out of Albuquerque. One of our editors, Brad Stoddard, another New Mexican. And then we're actually lucky enough to have with us on this call Mr. Michael Moreland, who was our director of photography on this and is actually an Academy Award nominee. So, woohoo!
You got a more than qualified crew for going out there. Well, let me ask Fritz, how did this go for you? Was it wrangling cats, or did everybody work really well together?
Probably one of the smoothest shoots I've been on, and I can attribute that to the work of the producers for sure. And then also we was able to work out and the creative spirit of the camera team, the people Michael brought on. It was just an amazing, amazing collaboration.
And had you known the people in Austin that you were going to be working with, or did that happen once you guys got out there?
Yeah, no, didn't know anybody there, and we arrived, and there had been a lot of pre-production done by one of the people who actually was also one of the actors, and she had found some amazing locations for us, and almost too much to choose from, but we landed on one that was just beautiful.
Terrific. And Cheryl, if I could ask you just real briefly, let everybody know what is involved with the 48-hour film project.
Basically, it begins on Friday evening. You have no idea what you're going to be making because you pull out of a hat a genre. It could be science fiction, horror, romance, comedy, mockumentary, etc. So all the teams pull out of a hat their genre, and each team is given the same prop, the same character, male and female, male or female, I should say, and the same one line of dialogue that they now have to write into their script in the genre that they've just selected. So basically, the teams get back together that night, and with our team, we all met at the Embassy Suites Hotel Central in Austin, and there were about 40 to 50 people in the room, all brainstorming for about an hour on our genre, which was coming of age. The writers wrote it. We filmed it Saturday, edited simultaneously, and turned it in by the deadline 48 hours later, Sunday evening.
That's terrific. And when will it be shown, or when will us New Mexicans be able to see it?
Right now, I'm working on that. Ann Lerner of the Albuquerque Film Office has been just incredibly gracious and is going to be allowing us to screen at the Chemo Theater in early October. I will know sooner and be sure to get you that information as soon as I have the exact date.
Terrific. And, you know, we have the New Mexico Filmmakers Showcase coming up October 12th through the 14th. The deadline is September 14th, so you still have time to submit it if you want. I'll just put that bug in your ear.
Sounds like a great idea.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought there would be a simultaneous hooray.
Yeah.
No, that sounds awesome, Derp.
That's that delay. Brad, tell us about the editing experience where you just kind of sat around and did nothing until you had something to work with, right?
Well, yeah, sort of. We were actually on set doing a rough cut as they were shooting and a transcoding because we shot on the red camera.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, pretty much a 36-hour period without any sleep, as usual, for the 48-hour. But we worked with a local editor also, Doug LaRue, who was great. And we didn't have to, you know, transport too much equipment. And then we, when we delivered on Sunday, we were all very relieved.
Yeah, I'm sure. And this thing, you guys did a, was it an Indiegogo fundraiser for this? Yeah, and
I'll let the producers answer that.
Go ahead.
Nick, why don't you talk about the setup of Indiegogo?
Well, Britt Tiano and I discussed getting that up so that we could be able to offset costs. The 48 is a volunteer only, so I want to make it clear that absolutely no one on the team was paid, but we were allowed to be able to raise funds for the trip to help pay for gas, pay for lodging, and cover the direct expenses for you know, our catering, things like that.
Right.
And I can say that in addition to money, we had an amazing outpouring from both communities. We were donated gear, we were donated catering. It was just really a fantastic experience. And then, you know, people like the person that was mentioned earlier that did a whole lot of on-ground pre for us was Barbara Williamson out of San Marcos. And she did just, I cannot even begin to describe all the locations that she brought to us. You will get to see one of them, which is just this absolutely gorgeous house that is physically on the river in San Marcos. It was just fabulous.
It's nice to hear the collaboration. Had you all worked together before, the Albuquerque group? Had you guys worked together before, or was this the first time you all had a project?
I'll tackle that first.
Yeah.
This, to a good extent, was the first time a number of us had worked together. Some of us had done some work together on other projects. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to know a number of people in the Austin area, like Michael and the others. So this really was kind of like a, shall we say, community building exercise.
Mm-hmm.
We're all independent filmmakers. And as such, we don't have that support system and structure that the studios bring to a project. All we really have is each other. And, you know, Texas has the ocean. Texas has rivers like we were on and all this beautiful location. But then New Mexico, as we all know, also has a lot of stuff, including the mountains and snow and all this that Texas doesn't have. You know, we're neighbors.
Right.
We have things that we both need and can share. And we really need to be trying to think about this as the independent film community instead of Texas versus New Mexico and all the film, you know, the tax incentives and all that kind of stuff. You know, this is about the independence, and this is about us coming together as a community. And I can really, really say I think we were quite successful in that. Anybody else care to chime in?
Hear, hear. Ditto.
Actually, I wanted to, Brent, can you talk about the first time you and Nick and I sat down at a table and the concept of the All-Star, sort of.
Well, Nick originally had an idea, which was let's go out and play with some people that we normally don't get to play with. And when we have the 48 in Albuquerque, everybody kind of runs to a set group that they worked with before. And here we had the chance to say, hey, instead of competing with each other, let's pick and choose and say, let's go someplace and find an opportunity and work together. And we got to bring together a team that had never been seen before. It was really a neat opportunity.
It sounds like a lot of fun and a lot of potential there. Are there Texans that will be participating in the Albuquerque 48 next year?
I think that'd be a good question for Michael.
Yeah, you know, I had such a great time with those guys. I'd like to joke that the New Mexico team just crashed the Austin party. But it was a great time working with those guys. I'm looking for excuses to come out to Albuquerque and work with them again.
Right, and how many participated in this? How many groups were there?
There were over 40 groups in Austin. I can't remember the exact count.
Right.
42.
This is just, it's growing worldwide, and I think it's so cool that Liz Langston, who's the co-founder of this, is in Albuquerque, and now they're starting up with the 48-hour music contest that's going to be in November. Anybody going to be participating in that?
Nick is, right, Nick?
This is Brad. We may...
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Nick. last year, we have a little group here in Albuquerque called Music from the Queue, which is now called Music in New Mexico. And we sponsored part of that music video project last year for the 48-hour in that we put all their music videos up online as they were being announced, at the winners were being announced. We'll probably do that again. We haven't really had talks with them, but we'd definitely like to support that project.
Terrific. We just have 30 seconds left. Is there anybody that we haven't heard from? Any last thoughts? Oh, I guess we heard from everybody.
This is Brad again. The only thing I would say is that, you know, it was just incredible. The people we met in Austin were great. They worked with us and, you know, went overboard, went the extra mile. And the connections we made, you know, not only personally, but I think for the connections to the New Mexico film community are very important. So we want to see that grow and build, and I think it's a very healthy relationship.
Hey, thanks for being ambassadors. We got to go. This is New Mexico Filmworks on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio, and we'll be back in just a minute with John Armijo, who's going to be wrapping up 1950s movies. Mexico Filmworks. I'm your host, Dirk Norris, and we have John Armijo on the line. He's wrapping up his segment on movies of the 1950s in New Mexico. Hi, John.
Howdy. Yeah, Dirk, just a few more films in the 50s, and we'll giddy up somewhere else. The Left-Handed God's Gun, starring Paul Newman as Billy the Kid, got off to a bad start when they printed the poster. You see, the kid was not a southpaw. Seems someone in their haste reversed the only known image of Billy, kind of like what someone at the U.S. Postal Printing Service did with a 1918 upside-down Jenny biplane stamp or the three-legged buffalo nickel. This was Arthur Penn's debut as a feature film director, and a fine one it was. The film was adapted for the screen from Gore Vidal's teleplay by the same title. Vidal also wrote the screenplay for Billy the Kid, starring Val Kilmer, which has been credited as a historically accurate depiction about the kid. This was a 1989 made-for-television movie and was not widely seen. This is an excellent film, and Kilmer nailed the part, by the way. Mm. Newman's co-stars included Lita Milan, John Denner, Herb Hatfield, Denver Pyle, and Ann Barton. John Denner, of course, was one of the greatest character actors in the business. If Ann Barton's name rings a bell, then you were one of the millions that tuned in the Leave It to Beaver TV series that was on the air from 1957 to 1963. Miss Barton played Eddie Haskell's mother. And you might remember Herb Hatfield as a title character in the 1945 Oscar-winning film The Picture of Dorian Gray. Here's something Vidal had to say about writing screenplays. William Faulkner told me not to fall into the trap F. Scott Fitzgerald did. He thought you could make something out of a movie. You can't. Go get the money, go home and write books. Lucy, a friend of a friend, told me that what's missing from my film history is retro gossip. So here you go, Lucy. I just happened to find the right one. It was reported that Newman and Lita Milan had a torrid love affair during the making of The Left-Handed Gun right here in Santa Fe, which might explain the miscue with the poster. The critics were not very kind to a film noir story called Make Haste to Live, produced by Republic Pictures in 1954. It had a heck of a great first act, but then fizzled faster than a cheap sparkler. Filming was done in Taos with a stellar cast that included Dorothy McGuire, Stephen McNally, Edgar Buchanan, and Carolyn Jones. You probably remember Edgar Buchanan from the TV show Petticoat Junction. Buchanan was a dentist before the acting bug hit him when he was 38. He and Glenn Ford were very good friends and appeared together in several movies. One time on the set, Ford needed some emergency dental work done, and the only anesthesia available was a bottle of whiskey, which Ford gladly drank to ease the pain, as did Buchanan to steady his hands. You see, he was a bit rusty. Republic Pictures, founded in 1935, celebrated their 75th anniversary in 2010. Republic's popularity stemmed from its lineup of westerns, mysteries, and action and adventure stories, and with their episodic serials that seemed to go forever on Saturday afternoons. They also launched the careers of Roy Rogers, Gene Autry, John Wayne, and Rex Allen. Another film that didn't fare too well at the box office was Ring of Fear. It was produced by John Wayne's Bat Jack Productions and distributed by Warner Brothers. Filming was done in Deming in 1954. Ring of Fear starred Mickey Spillane, Clyde Beatty, Pat O'Brien, and John Bromfield. Spillane, of course, was the king of the pulp novelists, and you were fortunate to have seen the Clyde Beatty circus. You'd know that Clyde was the premier lion tamer of his time. John Bromfield went on to star in the 1956 TV show Sheriff of Cochise, which was later retitled U.S. Marshal. Well, this next film did boffo box office. In fact, it was one of the biggest grossing pictures of 1954, and it's considered a classic today. The Man from Laramie was filmed in CinemaScope and produced by Columbia Pictures and released in 1955. The film was directed by Anthony Mann and starred James Stewart. This was their eighth film together. Also in the film is Arthur Kennedy, Donald Crisp, Kathy O'Donnell, and Jack Elam. Filming was done around Sandia Crest, Bonanza Creek Ranch, and at the Old Cook Ranch, and at the San Cristobal Ranch over in Galisteo. And they also filmed at the Salt Lake over by Willard. They even went up to Taos, and Tezuka Pueblo doubled for Santa Fe. All in all, Anthony Mann used 18 locations. Needless to say, the scenery is worth the price of admission. In 2008, the Western Writers of America rated The Man from Laramie as one of the greatest 100 Westerns of all time. In fact, 15 of them were made right here in the Land of Enchantment. As a side note, in 1955, television programming bereft of Westerns up until that time introduced three Westerns that would alter the viewing habits of millions of Americans for decades to come. Introduced that year with The Life and Legend of Wyatt Earp, starring Hugh O'Brien, Gunsmoke, starring James Arness, and Cheyenne, starring Clint Walker. Okay, Dirk, I've got two questions this time.
Okay.
Ken Curtis played Festus on Gunsmoke. Mm-hmm. What was the name of his donkey?
Oh, God. I didn't even know he had a donkey.
Ruth.
Ruth.
And did you know that Ken Curtis was one of the original Sons of the Pioneers?
I did not.
One more question, and careful, this is a loaded question.
All right.
What was the name of Marshall Dillon's horse?
Marshall.
Very good.
Thanks for the hint. And I've got one quick question for you, John. Where does the term box office come from?
You mean Buffo box office?
Yeah.
It comes from Daily Variety.
Ah, okay.
I forget who coined it, but their headlines always said, Buffo box office, Ben-Hur. And, you know, I'll be on vacation next week, so I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Okay, John, thanks so much.
Take care.
You're listening to New Mexico Film Works, and you still have time to enter into the New Mexico Film Office New Mexico Filmmakers Showcase. This is an opportunity for our filmmakers to get their work seen. The entries will be shown at the Guild Theater in Albuquerque. The deadline is September 14th, and you can get information by going to our website, nmfilm.com. Click on the link for New Mexico Crew and Filmmakers, and then the Filmmakers Programs. You've been listening to New Mexico Film Works on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio, and we'll be back next week, sans John Armijo.
Girls Inc. inspires all girls from 5 to 18 to be strong, smart, and bold. For inspiration and more information, go to santafe.com, keyword Girls Inc. Felines and Friends provides second chance rescue and placement for furry friends. For more info, go to santafe.com, keyword felines and friends.